Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
It is not an exaggeration to say that this past weekend will go down as one of the greatest 3 days in modern pop culture history.
Avengers Endgame broke box office records, thrilled diehard fans, and put a pin in one of the greatest franchises in movie history.
And HBO aired The Long Night, the fourth to last Game of Thrones episode ever, which left viewers weeping and cheering for almost 90 minutes.
We'll talk about both of those phenomenal works, plus a report from the Tribeca Film Festival and The Big Sell.
Inside Pop listeners, assemble.
Valar Morghulis. I'm Amita Patel.
Valar Doharis. I'm Sean David Johnson. And this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture, which has never been better.
It's so good. We're just going to stop for 1 second and not talk about pop culture, but ask you a big favor. If you get a second or a minute, head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review our show. It means a lot to us, and we thank you in advance.
Let's get into it right away. First off, this is a spoiler-filled episode. We're going to give you spoilers about Game of Thrones, not about Endgame. If you haven't seen The Long Night, Game of Thrones, skip ahead about 30 minutes and, you know, you'll be safe. But then when you're ready to live a full and rewarding life, come back and listen from the beginning, because The Long Night, Game of Thrones is, in my opinion, one of the great TV experiences of our time. So, that episode left us all with watery eyes from crying, hoarse voices from cheering, and the need to find multiple synonyms for the word epic, because it was so epic.
It was.
It also left me adjusting my brightness control, but we'll talk about that later. This episode was one joyously long battle that we both dreaded and couldn't wait for. Well, the wait is over. Some fell. Some rose to the occasion, and in the battle of the dead versus man, a girl was victorious.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, she was. All right. Well, there's so much to talk about, but I'd love to start with a question for you. How do you think the producers and writers and directors were able to create an 85-minute long battle scene that seemingly was not boring at all?
I know, because I love pretend violence. Pretend violence is one of my favorite things. Movie violence, also movie sex scenes, two of my favorite things. And I was actually, honestly, Amita, a little concerned, but I think they just did it so well. I think it was so, the pacing was so great. So I'll attribute the writing and then the editing of super duper battle and then suspenseful moment of Arya in the library trying to not be caught by the dead, you know, and then another big battle, and then focusing on just one person. So I think for the most part, it was really just the pacing of giving the viewer chance to catch their breath, focus on one person, and then going wide and seeing how we, meaning mankind, like started losing from almost the beginning. And so it wasn't like, oh, we're winning, now we're losing, or we're winning. It was from almost the beginning, how the hell are the Seven Realms going to pull this off?
Yeah. I love that. It was, I think everybody had theories and predictions. There's a whole Google form at my office about who was going to be alive, who was going to die, who was going to turn into a White Walker. There were just controversies and arguments left and right about it. People thought that there was going to be so many characters that were going to die in this episode. And, you know, and everyone was wondering, do you think somebody's going to kill the Night King? Who do you think it's going to be? And I think that there was a large majority of people who felt like Sam Tarly might be a very crucial part of it, because he was the only person who's killed a White Walker in the past, and they brought that up in the first and second episode. And I think the writers were giving a wink to the audience starting this episode off with him.
Yeah.
And then it was like the first third of this episode, there was moments of Sam, and like he was supposed to go in the crypt, but then he was on the front line. And so it was like they were completely doing this game of misdirection. Like, we're giving you a lot of Sam because you all think Sam's going to save the day, but he's not. And that, yeah, I was like living for it. I was like, oh, it's going to be Sam.
Yeah, I thought it meant that either Sam was going to be the hero of the day or Sam was going to die because they were giving him so much time. So fortunately, neither. So you made it one more episode, Sam. Nice job. but I saw this, you know, HBO produces these amazing kind of behind the scenes featurettes, which I watch immediately after the episode. Mm-hmm. Side note, I just discovered that one of our former colleagues and someone who we just like a lot as a person produces them. So, yeah. You know who I'm talking about?
I think David.
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to you, friend and former colleague. Amazing job producing those. Amita, you know that means that he probably has seen all of the episodes.
Uh-huh. I'm sure he has.
We should kidnap him. We should kidnap him.
Yeah, I'll reach out to him tomorrow. Okay. Get some insider info.
Tell him we're going to kidnap him. But anyway, sorry for the tangent. You know, but in that great featurette, which I suggest everyone takes a look at, the producers said that one of the things that they did was they divided the episode into three acts, and they wanted each of those acts to be a different genre. So the first third of the episode was all about suspense, and they tried to be a suspense film. And then the second act was all about horror, and they basically tried to be a horror film. And, you know, Ari in the Library in the Crypt, total horror film.
Oh, my God. And then, it was terrifying.
So scary and suspenseful. And then the last act, action, of course, and they just wanted to make the best action movie ever. So that was how they divide. That was where they were coming from.
And I think in that, I saw that after the Thrones featurette also. And they said the creators, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, said they always knew that Arya would be the Winterfell warrior to take out the Night King. And they said they'd known it for like the last 3 years, which is really amazing because I think a lot of us felt like, you know, like signs are pointing towards Sam or Jon Snow probably, but I love that they knew that and they kept it close and gave us the best surprise at the end.
Yeah, because honestly, we've all loved Arya from the beginning, and we've loved Arya, I would say, for most of the series, but there was a point for me where I was really concerned that, there was a season or two where Arya was not necessarily a good guy anymore, and I was really worried that mm-hmm. there would be this turn and she would be dark Arya. And so one of the things I loved, loved, loved in this episode was, you know, she had the chance to fulfill her list and take down the Hound, right? Yep. And she was aiming that arrow, but guess what? She took out a White Walker. And just when she realized that she needed to prioritize and maybe let go of some of that anger that was weighing her down in the past. This is like a therapy session for Arya. She became a hero. Like, I feel like that was the moment she became a hero, when she didn't shoot the Hound, but shot the White Walker chasing him.
You know, it's funny. In last week's farewell episode, as I like to call these episodes, the first episode was the reunion. The second one was the farewell. The third one is the war. So in the farewell episode, she was face to face with both the Hound and Beric, who both of them are on her list. And she had a moment right there. Nobody was around. They're all just sitting there. She was tested with the Hound every single episode. And she, I think, now realizes that they're warriors in arms together. She even, you know, said goodbye to Beric, R.I.P.
Yeah.
One of our deaths from last night. But it was so interesting because it's just like she's evolved. She's risen above. She had priorities and she took out that Night King. It's not about the Hound anymore. I bet they're just going to be besties now.
Don't push Arya. Don't push her. Well, you mentioned deaths. Let's talk about some of the great deaths, because we knew, Amita, you knew, mm-hmm. I knew, all of our listeners knew that some people were going to die. And not just extraneous people, but a couple of main characters were going to die.
Yeah.
I was praying that it would not be Brienne, and it wasn't. Ugh, thank the Lord.
Thank God Brienne of Tarth has lasted one more episode, because we just need more of her in our life.
Sir Brienne.
I will say, thank you. Yes, Sir Brienne. It has such a nice ring to it. I will say, I think according to the game that we did at work, and a lot of the people I've been talking to are fans, people really thought a lot of characters were going to die. And from our count, really just four characters have left.
Yeah, I wrote, just for listeners, I wrote down what I thought were the major deaths, and I actually left out Beric, which, so that's my question to you. So Beric's death didn't, obviously I forgot about it, didn't really affect me. He wasn't a character I guess I cared about or put much importance to. So I would like to ask you, Amita, let's just go for it. Which death out of the four good guy deaths hit you the most?
Ugh. Theon. Theon Greyjoy.
Interesting.
I always had a soft spot for Theon Greyjoy. I always liked Theon. He went through a lot. And
you're a good man,
he,
Theon Greyjoy.
Yes. And he just had the best swan song. Like, he defended Bran. He did whatever he needed to do. He tried to apologize to Bran right before he tried to attack that Night King, and he just went for it. Mm-hmm. He's like, I don't give a I am going straight towards this Night King, even though there's a bunch of zombies hanging around, White Walkers all around me, nobody's stopping me. All right. And that, I thought that was the most valiant death right there.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, that was, you know, I'm going to say, I try not to be obvious, but I'm going to say the obvious, which was Lyanna Mormont, first of her name.
Oh, I love her so much.
She was so great, and but you know what? I've got to say, I love that the producers went there, because across the board, everyone loves her. She's such a great character. So I think taking her out semi-early in the episode, or maybe midway, you know, made you fearful. Oh, if you're taking out the cutest badass girl, then anyone could die. So, and it was a great death, because it was a heroic death. She sacrificed herself, and she went out. Basically, she proved that she wasn't all talk, no action. That girl could run her mouth, and then she proved that she had the dragonglass skills to back it up.
She said, stab that giant in the eye. Yes! I think my saddest death was Ser Jorah.
Oh, I know. Ser Jorah.
I know. Poor Dany. She's losing it right now. She left her right hand is gone. But I think it was time. I think he had his time.
Yeah, he died doing what he felt like he was born to do, which was protect.
Yeah,
Dany. Oh, so we didn't plan this, but can I just say, because I want to know what you think about this. There were two times where I thought there would be kisses, and I was denied both times. The first time was this, what we're talking about. I thought Dany would at least give a little lip-on-lip action with Ser Jorah. That's really, he wanted that, and he kind of earned it.
There was a lot of blood, and there's a lot of, you know, dust in the air, ash.
They hadn't brushed their teeth in a while, most likely.
Yeah, you know, I think it was a little tough to do that. I think she's in shock. There might be a zombie coming behind her. She ain't got no time to kiss anybody.
A gentle kiss. That's all he wanted.
I would have loved, actually, from that moment, I didn't want to kiss. I wanted him to just say my queen. Like, I wanted his parting word. I was waiting for that.
Are you trying to make me cry right now?
No. How great would that have been? We should have been in the writer's room. Okay.
The other kiss that I didn't think I wanted,
God.
I didn't, is, you know what I'm going to say.
I know what you're going to say. I was like, what is happening when I watch this?
Sansa and Tyrion?
Burgeoning love story? Reunited? And it feels so good? What's happening?
They had two moments. And then like the end, when all seemed lost, I really thought, you know, when Sansa said, you know, you were the best of them, you were the best of my husbands, and he kind of had his quick little wisecrack of like, well, that's horrible to say. Because Sansa was married to literally the worst men in Westeros.
Yeah.
Ramsay Bolton. Joffrey Lannister.
Ugh.
That's it. Blah. Oh, and then Littlefinger tried to marry her. So yeah. Ugh. She, ladies, take it from Sansa. Stay away from the assholes. Okay.
But yeah, that moment was like, they purposely like, okay, you guys need to look at each other and you need to look at each other for a minute. We're not going to do like a good, you know, 20-second look. It's going to be a minute so that all of the audience is going to wonder what's going to happen. And then Tyrion just kiss her hand and let the podcasters and bloggers and writers and everyone have a field day.
I honestly would love that, right? Like, that would be another nice full circle moment. The man that was thrust upon her, that was meant to punish her and that she had no control over, for them to come back together and to say, the respect that I have for you has turned into something more than respect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down for that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm down for that.
I am too.
Tyrion and Sansa. Can you quickly give me what their cute celebrity name would be?
I know that you were going to ask these things. Sansirian? Sansirian.
Ooh, I like that. Hashtag.
Yes. Hashtag Sansirian. Go. Make it viral, people. Can I ask you a question? Because
please.
I will say the only thing from this episode that was just like left field was the Red Witch, Melisandre coming back, just like hopping on her horse, showing up before the White Walkers. I was like, wait, hold on. When was the last time we saw you? What are you doing here? How did somebody summon you here?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if this had been seasons 1 or 2 or partly 3 Game of Thrones, there would have been like 2 episodes, multiple scenes where we see her traveling back, mm-hmm. right? But I feel like in this new era of Game of Thrones that we've been through for 3 seasons, it's like no time to show her journey, no time to show what she's been up to while she was gone.
She just needs to come and save the day.
Yeah. I feel like her character did get short shrift. I think if George R.R. Martin ever writes those remaining books, we'll see exactly why she had to leave. Maybe she needed to gain more powers. Maybe this X, Y, or Z needed to happen. But yeah, I think that just kind of got left on not even the cutting room floor. They probably never filmed it, but they were just like, nope, fans will be happy to see her. And she literally delivered that song of Fire and Ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had a very nice little like, I come in, I help, I try to help, I close my storyline, and then I just walk away and end the episode in my death.
Now, again, so I guess we have a couple of critiques or questions. Why did she have to die? Did she just expend so much power, or was her job over and then she was allowed to die? It's not quite explained.
It's not. I mean, she said, I'll be dead before dawn. So she knew that. And obviously when she takes off that necklace, she becomes the old woman again. So I guess she utilized all of her power and had nothing else to give. And like air supplies, she was all out of love. I don't know. We need somebody to explain this. Tweet us. Let us know.
Oh, yes, please. And I guess the other thing, which I have a little bit of a question about, is Arya is one of my favorite characters. The fact that she got to kill the worst of the big bads made me very happy.
I mean, who doesn't like Arya? I'd love to meet... Okay, tweet us if you don't like Arya, because I'd love to know why. Right. Who doesn't like this girl?
And then we're going to publicly out you and ruin your life by telling everyone else that you like. But I have to say, Amita, there was a moment... Tell me how you felt, because there was... Like, I loved it, but then there was a moment of... Ooh, does this feel a little bit like an anticlimax? Like, in a way, it was so easy for her. I was like, but it should have been harder. So here's my thing. Do you feel where I'm coming from? Like, it almost seemed too easy. Like, after 7 seasons... All she had to do was jump, fake stab, and then
drop
do that
the dagger.
Badass. Love that move. I'm going to try it. With a sharp object, but maybe with a blunt object. I'm going to try it on the Q train tomorrow. With
just
somebody.
Do it with a pen. Start with a pen, like you're about to sign something, and then just drop it and sign with the other hand. I don't know.
there. If you're not in New York, you know, like there are people who deserve that. Like there are the people who clip their fingernails on the subway. I saw a guy flossing the other day.
I've never seen
He definitely before. Deserves I was ready to pull an Arya night king on him. I digress. But anyway, I do feel like...
we just want people to tweet us all week. Give us the scenarios where you're going to pull an Arya. Tweet us. Let us know when you felt like you needed to pull an Arya, guys.
But I guess that's the only thing I'm kind of questioning. I'm going to watch it again, but it felt a little bit too easy. And I think I wanted the murder of the Night King maybe to be a little bit more dramatic, maybe to involve some kind of sacrifice. Like, the only way Arya could have killed him was killing herself at the same time, or sacrificing someone else, or, you know, making a huge moral choice to accomplish it. It just seemed like his death was a little too easy. You feel me?
Or not? I think I get what you're... I get where you're coming from. I think the sacrifices were, you know, somebody like Theon, who just sacrificed himself, and, you know, everybody else is, like, spent trying to fight off all of those White Walkers. But, yeah, I think maybe the next episode we'll see. We'll see maybe some of the consequences. Who knows?
Yeah, and then
everybody's
got
to pick up, clean up, and then head over to King's Landing. We went from the darkest episode ever, like actually literally dark. People were complaining about needing to like up the brightness on their screens to watch this episode, to King's Landing, which will be full of sun, Euron Greyjoy, and Cersei Lannister still hooking up, apparently. Who knows what's happening with the dragons? I don't know what's happening with the dragons. One of the dragons got attacked.
And we didn't see that dragon at the end of the episode.
No.
So we know that Viseron, the zombie dragon, is gone. But in terms of Drogon and Rhaegar, we don't know. But
we don't know.
I want to say, who cares about those dragons? The person or the creature I most care about, Amita, you know this. Ghost.
Yes. No, we were trying to figure this out. What happened to Ghost?
Okay. I reached out to a couple of different people, and I've received conflicting messages. Some people think Ghost is definitely dead because he rode out or ran. He's not a person. He ran out with the Dothraki. And guess what? Not many Dothraki came back. Oh, first of all, can we have a moment of silence for the Dothraki?
Okay. They're yes, gone. Please. Dothraki and most of the Unsullied? Bye.
Some of them are still around, but yeah, most of the Unsullied are still.
Yeah.
But who cares about them? I'm talking about Ghost, the direwolf.
I just feel like...
But some people think Ghost is still alive, and you know I care a lot about these direwolves.
We all care about the direwolves, and I would love for Ghost to be alive, but if Ghost was going to come back, he would have clopped back with some of those stray horses. There would have been a ghost, there would have been a horse, and there would have been another horse, and then there would have been Melisandre. So
please don't let Ghost be a zombie direwolf. I'm done if that happens.
Well, if Ghost was a zombie direwolf, Ghost is dead, because all the zombies are dead.
That's right.
Or so are logical. They? I'm just going to say, or are they?
Don't confuse me. Okay, Amita, you know I love so much to do this. To you / with you, please give me a big, bad, bold prediction that you, let's do this, that you know is going to happen next week or that you want to happen next week. Give me one really good one.
Next week is an interesting scenario because I think a lot of people I talked to about this episode were saying they didn't realize it was going to go this way, because I think everyone thought there was going to be a massacre. A lot of characters would die. And it felt like more of like the last episode, because it seemed like we were building this whole Night King and the zombies and White Walkers for the entire series, that it felt like very final. And so, and I was like, I get where you're coming from, but the show is Game of Thrones. It's all about the throne. Mm-hmm. Who's going to sit on that Iron Throne? And so that is what this last three episodes are going to be about, right? It's about who's on these throne, and now that battle begins. So it's interesting because I think I didn't realize how many people were going to survive. Also, to know all the players that are involved right now and them going to King's Landing, I just don't know what to predict because I really didn't expect all this. Like, I'm really so confused in a way. Like, okay, we're going to go to King's Landing. Cersei's going to be all Cersei-less, delicious, you know, dark and twisty. They showed way too many shots of Euron behind her. So something with Euron and Cersei, are they going to fall in love? I don't know. I can't think of anything to predict for next episode.
I predict next episode will tell the unexpected but joy-filled story of how Ghost the Direwolf survived the onslaught and ascends to the Iron Throne. End of story. We don't even need those last three episodes. Goodbye.
Oh, my God. Wow, a direwolf on the throne.
I think that direwolf could definitely do a better job than the Mad King or Robert Baratheon or Cersei Lannister or Tommen or Joffrey. I'm down for that. Yeah, I said it.
All right. Okay. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens next week. You all know we'll be tuning in.
Yes. Okay, so let's transition. Amita, someone, a cousin of mine, actually asked me a very personal, unfair, existential question just today.
Oh, gosh.
He's asked me, which did I like better, Avengers Endgame or Game of Thrones The Longest Night?
These are tough questions.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say apples and oranges, but actually it's not apples and oranges because those two things which happened this weekend, it's crazy that they both happened this weekend, are very similar, right? Like, they're both these highly anticipated stories that are supposed to, you know, culminate all of our expectations and longings for a conclusion to an epic story, right? Like, they're very similar if you think about it. Lots of characters, too many characters, the promise that that people you care about will die, or rumors, fan service needs to happen, but you also expect a certain level of great storytelling. So similar. I think it's really cool that they both came out this weekend.
It's cool, Sean, but it's also a little overwhelming.
I know. You're okay. Overwhelming for you. Let's just tell our listeners now. Overwhelming for you because I actually saw Endgame.
And I did not. I did not see Endgame, truth be told, as much as I really wanted to. I was away for a very good friend's wedding, which was an amazing time with all of my old friends. And yes, after the wedding and the reception and the after party, I watched Game of Thrones in my hotel room because I did not want to be spoiled. I could not make the time to do the 3 hours of Avengers Endgame this weekend while I was away. And now I'm trying to figure out when in my schedule I'll be able to watch Endgame.
So my short answer, and we can maybe get into this in a future episode after you've seen Endgame, because we're not going to give any Endgame spoilers because you haven't seen it. But, you know, my answer is that they were both highly entertaining, incredibly entertaining. I'm going to have to say, though, if I have to pit them against each other, and why is it a contest? But if I have to pit them against each other, I am going to say that Game of Thrones, that one episode, has an unfair advantage. But I would have to choose it. If I could only have one of them exist in the universe, if I had to snap my fingers and one of them disappeared and the other one stayed, I think just because I think TV, and it's really someone we interviewed on our podcast a while ago, uses this great phrase, which of course I can't think of anymore, but it's basically about how television has become more cinematic. I can't think of what she says, like, but. And Game of Thrones was so incredibly cinematic, right? Like, 2 minutes without any dialogue and just long shots of lights flickering out. And just like the way that episode took its time and had silence and no dialogue and then action and then quiet moments. I think Endgame does that to some extent, but I feel like with Endgame, you also feel like the puppet strings of Disney, right? Like, it's part of this huge... So is Game of Thrones. But I think with all of the Avengers movies, which, you know me, I love. I'm a comic book nerd. I think I'm always aware that it's part of this machine. Where so if I had to say it, Game of Thrones is definitely a kind of storytelling from the mind of George R. Martin. Those novels were never meant to be as popular as they were. It was just pure storytelling. And I think that the producers of Game of Thrones have carried on that spirit. Obviously, there's money involved. A lot of money, actually. But I'll just say this. I loved Endgame, and we can talk about it in depth in the future. But I really want to ask you, Amita, what's it been like for you? This is like a racist person saying, what's it like being black? Amita, what's it been like? Amita, what's it been like for you? You poor creature. Not having seen Endgame for 4 days and avoiding spoilers.
Yeah, I need all of the sympathy right now, guys. I will say, maybe it was the crowd that I was with. Maybe it was because I went out of town and the combo of all of that. I did not feel that pressure of spoilers for Endgame. Like, I might have seen like somebody post a little something in like Instagram, and I would just go through it really fastly and like not look at it. But it wasn't as, I feel like the hype wasn't as big as Game of Thrones. I feel like everybody was Game of Thrones. All my family, we were all talking about Game of Thrones. That's why I watched it late night, because I knew I was going to get spoiled on it. People were texting me today about it. Like, I felt like there was so much Game of Thrones chatter. What's interesting is that on my cab ride home from the airport, a friend of mine called me to talk about Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And I will say I was very proud of myself. I tried not to say too much because I had no idea if my cab driver had seen Game of Thrones. And so I was being very respectful. I got off the phone and he's like, so you saw Endgame? I was like, no, I was trying not to spoil Game of Thrones for you. And we both just started laughing. He said he cried in Endgame and he hasn't seen Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh, geez. Now I need to see what's going to make me cry in Endgame. But yeah, I've been okay. I've been all right with the Endgame spoilers so far.
Wait, first of all, you and this cab driver, I want a romantic comedy right now. Did you two fall in love? I feel like that's the beginning of the romantic comedy I want to see. A sensitive, nerdy cab driver, really nice. That's what I want for you.
He was so nice. Even when I got in the cab, he was like, hey, what kind of music do you want to listen to? And like, some nice jazz came on. And I was like, this is good. And then he's like 10 minutes later, he's like, are you into hip hop? I was like, yes. Hi. Music and movies and TV all in this one ride.
And he's sensitive. I hope he picks you up again. That's all I'm saying. All right. Okay. So anything to wrap this up? It just feels like the perfect time to be a nerdy pop culture fan.
Yeah, and I was thinking about keep talking about this for a while. I just have been thinking about April as a magical month. And if you think about it, going through the years, in April 2 years ago, Lemonade came into our lives. Last year, Dirty Computer came into our lives. This year, we have Endgame, Game of Thrones, Killing Eve has returned, and that's fantastic. Lizzo, if anybody wants to listen to Lizzo's album, it just came out. It's fire. So much happens in April. Maybe it's like maybe also the birth of somebody on this podcast. Great things happen in April, y'all.
Oh, really great things happen. I'm just agreeing with you 1,000%.
Oh, and Madonna's coming out with new music. Hello. Oh, yeah. Also April.
April's the new July. Or December.
It's Christmas in April, guys, every single year.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening to that part of the show. Please send us your predictions for Game of Thrones. Send us your reviews for Endgame. We want to hear from you at Pop Insiders on Twitter. Do it now, like Liana Mormont did that giant.
And to celebrate April one more time, we're going to talk about Another awesome thing that happens in April, the Tribeca Film Festival. We will speak about that after this short message.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy.
Stuart Wellington.
And me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
As we said before, April is bountiful with so much pop culture, including the annual Tribeca Film Festival. Sean, you had the opportunity to check out a few films and TV shows, documentary series. What have you watched thus far?
Thank you, Amita. I've seen some really great things. I have seen the very first episode of Mics and Men, which is a documentary about the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes.
And I have to say that, oh my God, I have to say that I wish A Tribe Called Quest, which as we know is my favorite hip-hop group of all time, probably, definitely, I wish they had had a treatment like this. I think...
Really?
What I'm going to say is I've only seen the first episode, but I think Sasha Jenkins, who's the director and one of the producers, he's, you know, like he worked for Vibe magazine back in the day. He's like bona fide, credible hip hop guy, creative guy. He's created something really special. So it's a doc about Wu-Tang Clan. So it's about the group. It's about all nine members. It's about their music, but then it's also about where they grew up in the projects in Staten Island. It's about America. It's about America's reaction to them. It's about their reaction to... It's just like any good documentary. It's about something, but then it's about so much more. Loved it. I think it's premiering the first week of May on Showtime. So
it's exciting.
Catch it. I saw a great Q&A with Sasha Jenkins and a number of members of Wu-Tang. RZA.
So cool.
Ghostface Killah. It was great. And they were great. They were funny. They were smart. They were open. Loved it. You would have loved it because I know that you're a hip hop fan. Now, are you a huge Wu-Tang fan? What's your level of Wu-Tang fandom?
I am not a huge fan, but I obviously appreciate and enjoy. Obviously, Cash Rules everything around me. And I loved Method Man and Redman. I was really into their collabs together. Mm-hmm. I got to know Old Dirty Bastards music as well. Rest in peace, ODB. For sure. I'm looking forward to seeing this series. Is it like 4 episodes? 5 episodes?
I think so. I think maybe 6. Perfect. And just really great storytelling. Visually really cool, like the way that they do the sit-down interviews. And I know that's like something both you and I have produced a lot of those. The way they produce those is really cool, really inventive. And I really enjoyed it. It makes me want to be a bigger fan. I'm definitely going to go back and listen to their music more than I have in the past few years. So yeah. I love that. And then I also saw so far a film called Luce. L-U-C-E, which stars Naomi Watts, and it's about a suburban white couple who had adopted a child soldier from Africa. And the movie takes place when this child soldier is now a senior in high school, and he is the epitome of a perfect student. He's in debate club. He's on the track team. Everyone loves him. He makes speeches. But the movie takes a turn when something is discovered in his locker. And everyone's world gets turned upside down. It also co-stars Octavia Spencer, who gives a phenomenal performance as his civics teacher. And so that was great. I really enjoyed that. I had a little head scratching at the end, just trying to figure out what I think it means. I won't say anything more about that. But Amita, that's one of the things I love about going to these festivals, and I feel really fortunate that we have a chance to check out movies at Tribeca. To see a movie before you've heard any buzz, any reviews, any tweets, it's a really cool feeling and also a little intimidating to be like, oh, nope, you have to completely make up your mind about how you feel about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think I feel the same way when I look at, you know, we get like a, when we get our press passes, we get like a whole, it's like a novel of all of the films with like, you know, all of the information about a little synopsis about the film, you know, the cast, crew, writers, directors and such. And it's a lot. There's a lot of films at this festival and it's a little overwhelming to go through all of them. But at the same time, you really haven't heard of a lot of them. And so you really get to kind of just be curious and explore. And then maybe in a few months, you might see it get some traction depending on what distributor picks it up and where it goes. So it's really fun. It's really fun to go to these festivals and see some things maybe before other people can.
And that always makes me feel special. I'll just say like, so a couple of films I'm definitely planning to see, and maybe we can talk about them in the next episode. But as a little preview, there's a documentary about D'Angelo and what he was up to during the couple of decades after Voodoo, and then his last album, Black Messiah. So it's a documentary about, I think it's about him and his creative process and his life. Looking forward to that.
Cool.
There's a film co-starring Frida Pinto and Leslie Odom Jr., which I think has a kind of a sci-fi twist to it. So all those things equal Sean Johnson. And Amita Patel.
Yes.
And a couple of, there's a Michael Hutchence documentary, the lead singer, former lead singer of NXS.
Oh,
I
so
want to
see that.
That's on my list. So many movies, so little time. But the Tribeca Festival just does such an amazing job of celebrating established directors and TV shows and films, but then also bringing new people who deserve some shine. And so I think they've done a phenomenal job this year.
Yeah, they really expanded too. Like they've have now a lot of like AR and VR virtual reality premieres and events, and they also have these really great Tribeca talks. There was one I unfortunately missed it, but with Queen Latifah and Dee Rees. There's one with like Michael J. Fox and Dennis Leary. There's some really great talks also that just dives into somebody's career and just talks about, you know, film and TV and culture, which is really, really cool to be in the room when those conversations happen.
Yeah. So if you're in New York City or near New York City, there's still time while listening to this episode. You should definitely check out. There's still some tickets available for some screenings. Definitely for if you're a fan of great creative storytelling, Tribeca's for you. Check it. And Amita, our show is not over. We've talked about so much, but there's still more ahead.
It's an abundant April episode.
Hashtag abundant April. Is that going to be trending?
It is, even though this episode comes out on May 1st. But that's okay. It's still summing up the abundance that is in April. We will be back with the Big Sell after this short message.
Thanks so much to the over 28,000 members who joined or upgraded during the 2019 Max Fund Drive and to all of our monthly members.
To celebrate hitting our goal this year, we're putting the 2019 Max Fund Drive pins on sale for all $10 and up monthly members.
As in past years, you'll be able to get some pins and support a great cause at the same time. The proceeds from this year's sale will support the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates Association.
National CASA does amazing work for children and youth through a national network of 950 member programs. We are proud to be able to support them.
The pin sale will run from April 29th until May 10th. And if you're a $10 and up monthly member, your personalized code is waiting in your inbox right now. For more details, you can head over to MaximumFun.org/pins.
And once again,
thank you.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell.
If you don't know, now you know. The Big Sell is our segment where we share something we're enjoying in pop culture with each other. And then the other person takes a listen or watches it, digests it, absorbs it, and comes back with a rating and review. Last week, Sean sold me a playlist from our Sibs from Another Crib, our friend Joj Cast, who have a wonderful podcast, and they're based in England, and we miss them very much.
Yeah, we've seen them in person, IRL, separately. Some glorious day we'll see both of them at the same time. I think we're just counting on them to once again come over to our side of the pond as opposed to us going over there.
But why not? We should go over there.
That would be amazing. Inside Pop going international would be the best thing of my life. But okay. Back to the playlist.
Yes. Right? Sorry. We digress.
So, yeah. So I sold it to you because, A, I think, and I know you agree, that they have really amazing, eclectic, diverse taste. And I hadn't listened to the entire thing when I sold it to you, so it was a little bit of a wing and a prayer. So let me not say anything else. I really want to know what you thought and what maybe some of the highlights of the playlist were for you.
I very much appreciate this big sell, especially because, as we all have discussed JojoCast a couple times on this podcast, we have very similar tastes, but also very different tastes. And so it's cool that we're all very much into pop culture in our own way. And this playlist was a really diverse group of sounds and bands and artists. And it was interesting listening to it and how it was built, because I would have, you know, a really cool folk song and then like an instrumental song, and some had an 80s vibe and then great hip hop on here. So it was really different. You know, I think certain people make playlists that are like 90s R&B, and this one kind of spanned a whole lot of genres. And so it kept me on my toes, but also really introduced me to a lot of artists that I had not heard of, but also reminded me of some that I really enjoyed and some new music that they put out. So some of the highlights I had was obviously one of the first tracks they had was a James Blake song. So you got me, you had me at hello. That was great. It's called Don't Miss It. And then I don't know who these people are, but Loyal, Karner, Rebel Clef, and Kiko Bum. They had a song called You Don't Know on this playlist that I really enjoyed. Jamila Woods, who we both discovered through JojoCast, they had the couple tracks from her, which I really, really liked. And there is one song that I feel like was a nod to you. It was called Brooklyn Flower by another interesting name, Damu the Fudge Monk. Damu, I don't know how to say, but it's a great name of a group, band, person. And Brooklyn Flower was a highlight. And I know when you sold this to me, you really liked that Karen O and Danger Mouse song Woman, which was really fun.
Oh, so good. I can't wait for the album. They turned me on to Karen O last year, and yeah, so I love that. I want everyone to think of me as Brooklyn Flower from now on. I didn't even think about that, but if you want to call me Brooklyn Flower behind my back or to my face, I'm down with either.
Yeah, I was like, I bet Sean loved this song.
Yeah, I did. I actually did love that song. It's about me. And then I loved, what else did I love? I loved the Disraeli song. And Disraeli, someone who I've heard about but didn't know that well. So I liked the Disraeli song. What blew my mind was the Soundwalk Collective with Patti Smith doing this kind of spoken word stuff over. Because I love Patti Smith so much. And I didn't even know that she did this and that this was some new music that she was making. So that made me really happy. And then like there are a whole bunch of people. Yeah, I loved it. And then there were like they're just people who I've heard of and just never gave a chance. Well, we've talked about Earl Sweatshirt earlier.
Yeah,
in our thing.
I can't remember when we talked about Earl Sweatshirt, but when his song came up on this playlist, I was like, I remember, Earl Sweatshirt from something.
And I really liked the Anderson .Paak song they put in there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was good. And then you mentioned her earlier in the podcast. This, like, right in the same week that I discovered her on their playlist, a friend of mine was raving about her, so I listened to her full album. Lizzo is sent from the heavens above. Favorite new album so far of this year, I think.
I love her so, so much. And I'm so glad that you discovered her as well. But yes, of course, Juice. If you haven't heard Juice, you probably have. You just don't realize it's Lizzo. You love the song. I'm just telling you that now. And then another really interesting thing, like I said, they went through different genres and it kind of just skipped around. You didn't know what song you'd get next. And there was this really wonderful orchestral song called Ascent Day One by Ludovico Einaudi. I hope I said that name right. And it had such movement and emotion to it. And I happened to listen to it again right after I watched Game of Thrones. And it was like, oh, it felt like this song could have been in Game of Thrones. It just was so powerful. I loved it.
So, yeah, eclectic, diverse. I really loved it. So, Amita, what is your rating for the JojCast New Music in 2019 playlist?
Oh, this is a solid 3.5 stars for me, for sure. Yes. I loved it because I really got enlightened by so many new artists I hadn't heard of and reminded of artists that I loved. So it was a really great mix to listen to, and I feel like I'll come back to it and dive in and absorb some more.
That's awesome. We haven't had a 3.5 in a minute. So well done, JojCast, and well done you, Amita Patel.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Taking a bow for listening to a playlist.
Well, listen. What do you have for me this week?
I have something music related, but it's an interesting essay, which it is from one of our favorite sites, Vulture. I came across it. I can't remember how I came across it, but I just love the title of it. And it was this analysis and critique about the music industry, and it's called Welcome to the Age of Pop Plagiarism. And the byline is, in 2019, the question of if and how a song has been copied is an incredibly complicated one. And so it's a short essay, but it's a series. So I'm going to just tell you the first essay that kind of opens up the whole thing. But the other pieces of this series from Vulture, the titles of them are Eight Songwriters on the Line Between Inspiration and Theft, A Brief History of Song Copying from Handel to Pharrell, and Nine Ways to Copy a Song, a Handy Primer. So it's a really interesting critical analysis of the state of music these days. And I thought you would be really interested in at least the first one. I'm sure you'll probably read the other ones as well, because I will too. But the first one is the one I'm selling to you.
Awesome. I love that. Love that. Love that. I look forward to reading that. We're going to put the link in our show notes so that the listeners can read along as well. Thank you, Amita, for that. Vixell.
You're more than welcome. I don't want this episode to end, but I think it's time. Congrats to all of you guys. You made it through this episode. But the conversation continues. Stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram. Go to @PopInsiders. Head over to Facebook at Inside Pop Podcast. Go to InsidePopPodcast.com. Subscribe. Share this podcast. Listen to it multiple times if you'd like to listen to us nerd out about all of the abundance of April pop culture.
You can also find us on MaximumFun.org, a podcast network filled with a bunch of other podcasts like ours that delve in comedy and culture.
And up next in a couple weeks, you can guess there will be more Game of Thrones conversations, because if you are a fan, you know the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones every single season is always the highlight of that season. So when it's the penultimate episode of the end of this incredible series, you know is going to slay, and we will be there with a recap and we will be discussing it at length.
Part of the journey is the end.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Congratulations on 150 episodes. That's pretty great.
Yeah, congrats to you. Pat on the back.
Yes.
I'm proud. I'm proud of us. 150 episodes.
What do we get for that? Is there like a gift?
Yes, there is a gift.
Do I get Valerian Steel for my 150 episodes? Oh my God!
No, 150 is Dragonglass.
Oh, great. Yes. Okay. I'll take it.